This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
We will stand with President Zuma now and will stand with him until the land returns. Hands off Zuma!
That's a supporter of former South African President Jacob Zuma. Mr. Zuma appeared in court today on corruption charges. Details coming up. Also, the spread of fake news into the news cycle across sub-Saharan Africa is causing widespread concern. And in Malawi, the United Nations is urging the government to do more to protect albinos. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, former South African President Jacob Zuma appeared in court today to face corruption charges. The appearance was brief but significant, coming just under 2 months after his resignation. Addressing supporters outside the courthouse, Zuma criticized the charges as politically motivated. Tusoko Malo reports from Johannesburg.
Innocent until proven otherwise.
These were the words of former President Jacob Zuma on Friday, speaking after his appearance at the Durban High Court to face charges of fraud, racketeering, corruption, and money laundering. Earlier, a defiant Zuma smiled and waved to hundreds of his supporters as he entered the building. In court, the prosecution told Judge Temba Sishi that they've agreed with the defense to postpone the case until June 8th. The postponement was mainly to give Zuma a chance to finalize his review application, objecting to the decision to recharge him. Zuma was not asked to plead or pay bail, with the judge only warning him to appear on the next court date. Andile Mkhitama was one of the Zuma supporters who prayed, sang, and danced outside the court.
We are here to stand with the president of the people. We will stand with President Zuma now and we'll stand with him until the land returns. Hands off Zuma!
For many South Africans, seeing the former president in the dock was somehow unbelievable. Sizakele Dlamini says it's a positive development in African democracy.
It is a norm in African countries that former presidents or current presidents who break the law, they are led to go scot-free. South Africa has proven beyond a reasonable doubt that it's doable, it can be done.
Zuma's party, the African National Congress, has decided not to support him during his court battle. However, some ANC members came out to support him Friday, saying they were doing so on their own. Political analyst Karima Brown says this could be a big blow for Zuma.
I think this is a man deeply at odds with his own organization. Now, for someone like Jacob Zuma, who's been in the African National Congress for over 65 years, that is a deep, deep wound.
The charges relate to kickbacks Zuma allegedly received in connection to a European arms deal undertaken by South Africa in the 1990s. A representative for the French arms dealer, Thales S.A., is facing charges that are similar to Zuma's. Zuma first appeared in court for the same charges in 2007. They were dropped in 2009 by the Democratic Alliance Party convinced the court to reinstate them, leading to Friday's appearance. As usual, Zuma supporters demanded that he sings his trademark songs Friday, and he did not disappoint. Tusoko Malo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The spread of fake news into the news cycle across sub-Saharan Africa is causing widespread concern among news organizations and the general public. The U.S. State Department, through the Bureau of International Information Programs, is taking action with a media literacy awareness campaign targeting over 500,000 young people in Africa. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
The two-month-long campaign was launched on April the 2nd as the world marked International Fact-Checking Day. U.S. officials say the digital effort will target the public, including members of the Young African Leaders Initiative, or YALI. The network, established by former President Barack Obama in 2013, is an effort to invest in the next generation of African leaders. Christine Nidler is the YALI network coordinator.
This campaign started online, Facebook, Twitter, and, you know, it's part of a year-long campaign for the embassy here in Kenya. It's asking our network members to stop. When you see information, before you share it, stop. Reflect. Think about what you're going to share and verify to see if it's true. And on April 2nd, International Fact-Checking Day, the YALI Network campaign launched Africa-wide to more than 500,000 of our network members.
The campaign, titled Hashtag YALI Checks, Stop, Reflect, Verify, is designed to sensitize the public and counter the spread of false news. It will provide a mix of online activities, including an email series, an online quiz, blog posts, online chats, public outreach, educational videos, and online pledges. According to media analysts, fake news is eroding confidence in the media. Caro Kimutai is the head of digital platforms at the Standard Group, one of Kenya's leading media houses.
So everything is a rumor until verified. Even if I see it on, you know, on a reporter's page and have to cross-check. Because, like I said, when I started, we're in the business of trust. And if trust is broken, we are in a very complex situation with our audience.
In recent months, content from non-credible news sources and sophisticated videos masquerading as legitimate newscasts have influenced people's socio-political opinions in different countries across Africa. Mark Kaigwa, the founder of a Nairobi-based digital tech research company, Nendo, explains.
WhatsApp, according to Nendo, has over 12 million users in the country. That makes it, even though it is an instant messaging application, it makes it the battleground for facts, for information, for breaking news. So for us, the one set of prescriptive tips, it depends on the actual platform where you consume and get your news from. And WhatsApp, just by sheer numbers, it is close to twice the size of Facebook. It is 12 times the size of Twitter. So it is a key section of the digital population.
The Kenyan Parliament is also taking action. It's considering a new law, the Computer and Cybercrimes Bill of 2017, that would outlaw the spread of false news. Some fear the government could use the law to stifle the flow of information, including criticism of human rights abuses and graft. Robin Jogu is a news editor with a local radio station in Nairobi. He supports legal efforts to control the problem, but acknowledges that passing effective legislation may be a case of trial and error.
The digital sphere is evolving too fast. So sometimes we pass that law and we know the processes that it takes to pass a new law. Before that, things will have really changed. In the process of coming up with new laws, the government will always try and come up with things that will compromise the media freedom.
But the YALI-driven campaign is urging young African leaders to stop, reflect, and verify before forwarding what could be fake news. Nidla is calling on more people to join the campaign.
Make that pledge. Take the pledge. It costs you nothing, but it's saying, hey, I want to be a part of stopping and identifying misinformation. So,
according to the campaign organizers, there have been a total of over 10,000 pledges to hashtag stop, reflect, verify before responsibly sharing the information. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
The United Nations says it is concerned with the resurgence of attacks and killings of persons with albinism in Malawi. This comes after the death of a young man with albinism whose body was found on Sunday after he had been missing for 3 weeks. The incident brings the number of albino attacks to 4 since January. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
McDonald Masambuka went missing on March 9th in Machinga District, south of Malawi. The 21-year-old Masambuka told his relatives he was going to visit his girlfriend. Police found his body Sunday buried in a maize field owned by one of the suspects in the case. His legs were gone and some bones were removed. Police have arrested 8 people in connection to the murder. The suspects include a police officer and a medical officer. Tommy Ginyaude is deputy national police spokesperson. He declined to discuss the roles of a police and a medical officer in the attack.
We are still investigating. We arrested them because there was a revelation and confession from some of those that were arrested. So the roles they played are to be realized once we are through with the investigations.
The United Nations has called on the authorities to redouble their efforts to end the attacks on albinos. Maria Jose Torres is a UNDP representative in Malawi.
We are also extremely concerned by the fact that two of the alleged perpetrators, there is a police officer and a medical doctor. That's, again, an issue of concern because they do have the responsibility to protect those affected by albinism.
Police records show over 130 albinos have been injured since the attacks started in 2013. At least 20 have been killed. Albino people who lack pigment in their skin have faced attacks because of false beliefs that their body parts have powers to bring good luck and wealth. Torres says she hopes the killing of Masambuka will be the last one. Overston Kondowe is the president of Association of People with Albinism in Malawi. He says the arrest of officers confirms the existence of markets for albino body parts.
Government has been challenging that there is no market and this is only done by those who are ignorant and especially those who are in the rural areas because of poverty. But this case has really vindicated us because having a police officer and a medical officer as well as witch doctors, it means that there is really a trade.
But police spokesperson Nyaude maintains there is no market.
We have arrested some before this issue. They confessed to say we killed an albino. Here are the human bones. We saw there's a market. We hid the market in Mozambique, but there's no market. And when the Malawi police officer delegation to Mozambique, Mozambicans were said we thought we had to hide the market in Malawi. So it's just a myth that people are believing, but there's no market.
Heather Wikintaba heads a committee tasked to fight abuse of people with albinism in Malawi. He says the country has yet to find the best way to end the attacks.
Our friends in other countries around us have cut down this considerably because they have actually implemented death sentence on some of these issues. Now, we still have death penalties on our law books, but you know the presidents in the past have not signed the death sentence on any of these things. We don't know whether that would work or not.
President Peter Mutharika has called for a national dialogue on whether the country should impose the death sentence on those convicted of murder. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Talks among officials from Ethiopia, Egypt, and Sudan failed to settle their concerns over Ethiopia's Grand Renaissance Dam across the Blue Nile. Egypt fears the dam could reduce flows in the Nile River, which provides most of the country's water. Ethiopia says the $4 billion hydroelectric project will not cut water levels. Sudanese Foreign Minister Ibrahim Gondour said that after more than 16 hours Thursday, the negotiators could not reach an agreement because of a technical issue that we cannot discuss. He said a new round of talks hasn't been set, but irrigation ministers from the three countries are expected to meet at some point. Ethiopia expects the electricity generated by the dam to power the country's industrial growth. The exodus of nearly 70,000 Congolese refugees to Uganda so far this year has led to a deadly outbreak of cholera. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Society says more than 40 people have died in two refugee camps and that 2,000 people are being treated for the illness. VOA's Paul Alexander spoke with Robert Kiwesiga, Secretary General of the Uganda Red Cross Society.
There was already an outbreak of cholera in Congo where these refugees are coming from. So the point of origin is in Congo, so they came with it. When they arrived in Uganda, white has been able to expand, especially at the beginning, was that then the water and plantation facilities where they were located were also not sufficient. But the origin is in Congo itself.
And what can you do to fight the outbreak?
So that, one, we ensure that the water and plantation facilities in the areas those facilities are in place, so the water and sanitation facilities be in place such that we can manage its spread and, of course, treat those who are already having it. And this calls for resources, and that's why we have launched an appeal, because we need more resources to contain that. The second way of containing it is what we call hygiene promotion through social mobilization to the neighboring communities of these refugee settlements, because there are no boundary walls and these refugees can easily mix with the nationals on the host community. So extending the social mobilization of hygiene promotion to the neighboring communities of these refugee settlements. But when I talk of water and sanitation, the first one is to make sure that there is availability of safe water for all the youth, to make sure that the sanitation facilities are adequate and clean, such that these refugees can use them without using sanitation facilities or carrying out sanitation issues which are not within the prescribed parameters for containing the disease.
And what is the general condition of the refugees who are arriving?
It is bad shape. And what I mean by bad shape is, first of all, to be a refugee is not a cup of tea where you leave a familiar territory and you are going to be an unknown. So that itself is very traumatizing, and that trauma you can easily see. The other factor of it is the reason why they are leaving Congo is that there have been these tribal clashes, fighting, and of course through fighting, they have been forced to run away from their homes, which itself is not a cup of tea. But on the other hand, some of them, their relatives have been killed. Some of them, they have been separated from their loved ones. And for the rabbis, the women and the girl child, some of them have been abused. So you are looking at the shattered person arriving in Uganda. And so they arrive in Uganda in that kind of state where they are no longer seen as human beings without dignity, but they see themselves as people who are just numbers now. And so when they are settled in these refugee settlements, now, besides mobilizing money to give them food, to give them shelter, to give them the basics of life, which we are fundraising for, also one has to factor in the question of catering for their psychosocial support, such that they can be able to overcome that trauma.
That was Paul Alexander talking with Robert Kiwesiga, Secretary General of the Uganda Red Cross Society. You are listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. 24 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Former South African President Jacob Zuma appeared in court today to face corruption charges. The spread of fake news into the news cycle across sub-Saharan Africa is causing widespread concern. And the United Nations says it is concerned with the resurgence of attacks and killings of persons with albinism in Malawi. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. In Zimbabwe, the Human Rights Watch says children working on the country's tobacco farms face daily dangers and long-term risks. Reporter Kuzaizen Wash has more details.
Dewa Mavinga, the Southern Africa Director of Human Rights Watch, or HRW, says the report it issued details the hazards for young tobacco workers.
Child labor, nicotine poisoning, exposure to toxic pesticides, forced overtime work without compensation. These are some of the problems that Human Rights Watch found in Zimbabwe's tobacco sector.
The problem, he says, stems from inadequate information about the risks and sometimes limited farmer resources. Margaret Worth is a co-author and researcher for the report.
We found that children are working in hazardous conditions on tobacco farms in Zimbabwe, doing work that puts their health and safety at risk and interferes with their education. One of the most serious health risks involved in tobacco farming is nicotine poisoning.
She says the poisoning happens when the skin absorbs the nicotine in the tobacco plants, resulting in headaches, nausea, vomiting as symptoms. Worth says this affects children more as their bodies and minds will still be developing. HRW says it tabled its findings to government officials and discovered that Zimbabwe has just 120 labor inspectors countrywide, a number that civic organizations say is not enough to prevent illegal child labor.
We are also aware that child labor does not just exist in the tobacco farming sector. In general agriculture, the prevalence of child labor is 60% in Zimbabwe. Our recommendation is that children must be in school and not at work. Let the older workers do the work on the tobacco farms while the children go to school.
For its report, HRW interviewed 125 people involved in tobacco farming. Among them were 14 child workers and 11 adults who started working in the sector when they were children. Ishaone Sumoyo is the Tobacco Industry Marketing Board spokesperson. He says, while the industry has concerns about how the report was done, it does not condone child labor.
For me, of concern will be the sample. We probably have almost 1 million children on the farms, and if you interview 14. But for us, it's actually of concern, and we would want that to be reported, and we will deal with those cases.
Moyo says tobacco traders would not buy tobacco produced with child labor, and his organization runs awareness campaigns on how to produce tobacco in a sustainable manner. He says the group also will not register any tobacco farmers below the age of 18. He adds that there are no known cases of child labor, but rather cases of children helping out in their family farms. Masocha at the Child Labor Organization says there is a difference between children helping out on family farms and full-time child labor. He says such family work usually does not affect children's studies, health, and social well-being. But children who work long hours often suffer in all those areas. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Sports fans, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT on the internet. You can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.